And welcome. My bad. And welcome to Late Night. Late Night at Seth and Sean. That doesn't really sound very good. Yeah, Bert and Ernie are not involved. Seth came in, Sean Palmer. Season week one of the NFL season almost over. And yet that doesn't really make the headlines right. That's not the number one headline. TMZ comes out with the video showing Ray Rice landing a solid punch that half the heavyweights in professional boxing would be proud of, knocking his wife, his girlfriend, now wife, unconscious. And suddenly, the Ravens suspend him indefinitely. The NFL cuts him. Is this really, I guess what I find so surprising is, the claim is that the NFL had not seen this video. Mr. Palmer, do you believe that?
Well, let's get it straight first. The NFL suspended him indefinitely, and the Ravens cut him, not the other way around.
Agreed,
so,
my fault.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure that our listeners know what we're talking about. I don't know. It kind of boggles my mind that the NFL would not have seen this video yet. I have a really, really hard time believing it. And I'll tell you right now, if it comes out that they did see it and they've been saying that they didn't,
is Roger Goodell's job in trouble if that happens?
Yeah, I think it actually is. If he's lying about this, I absolutely think it is. Do you disagree with me? Let's assume he's lying.
I'm honestly befuddled by the whole thing. Why would he lie? You know, the idea of him lying about this seems so ridiculous. But, you know, there have been a lot of quotes that people have seen this video, that this is nothing new. But I guess that also kind of goes back to if it's proven he had seen this video, yes, I believe he's in trouble. But, I mean, the reality is we have seen video of Ray Rice dragging his wife, his girlfriend, now his wife, unconscious out of the elevator. How do they think she became unconscious? This is something that I kind of assumed had happened, since that seemed to be the consensus. So why is this now, why is actually seeing the video of it happening change the idea of what happened? We already thought that this is what happened. Why does this change everything so drastically?
Because a picture speaks a thousand words. I mean, there's a couple of reasons why this changes things. Number one, visual evidence definitely supersedes any other evidence. I mean, there were rumors, and when Ray Rice's wife, then girlfriend, said, "I'm sorry for what I did to provoke this," everybody thought, okay, maybe she hit him, maybe she scratched him, maybe she did something. If you look
at that
video,
she pushed. She pushed him. She shoved him. But I'm not. I'm certainly not justifying anything.
No, but not what I thought. When I heard that, I thought, okay, maybe she punched him, maybe she scratched him, maybe she poked him, maybe she pulled a gun on him. I mean, maybe she did something. Pushing him. I mean, that I haven't seen an uppercut like that or a cross like that since Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson. I mean, it was so quick that it wasn't like, and granted, there's no audio on the video, so you're kind of just taking it for what it is, but it looked like he didn't even give her a shot. It was just boom, gone, done. And there is nothing. I mean, I was talking with a coworker today, and one of the first things you learn as a young boy is that you don't hit a woman. It doesn't matter what the woman does. You don't hit a woman. It's a fundamental concept that you don't hit a woman. This was beyond just hitting a woman. This was clocking her out. And like I said, a picture speaks a thousand words. So you had an idea of what he had done. But you can see it. When you see something, man, I mean, and the ironic thing is that not only is the NFL not on the front page, but they're not on page two today, and we can get to that in a second. But, yeah, there's no way that the NFL could have kept him. I mean, his suspension was up over after this week. Could you imagine Ray Rice coming back after this week, after that video was released?
No. As I said, that's why I find the whole thing so confusing. If anyone wants to call in and talk about this, 760, talk about week one of the NFL or the Atlanta owner, got a lot of stuff going on. Most of it not good. 760-283-0846.
We haven't even gotten to the Giants.
We haven't gotten to the who?
To the Giants.
They suck. I'm not really sure what else there really needs to be discussed.
Ladies and gentlemen, the professional opinion of one Seth Kamen, they
it
suck.
Is. They're just not good. And it's going to be a long season. But I knew, you know, I thought that going in. I picked them, what, 7-9?
Yep.
I mean, 6-10, something like that. So anyway, you know, the question, as I said, if he knew, what the hell was Goodell thinking? If he didn't know, why are all these reporters claiming that he knew or that they had seen it? You know, to me, it's all there's no consensus on what happened. I mean, there's no consensus on this aspect of it. Let me rephrase. And, you know, the question is, in a year, the ban is indefinite. I assume he will be reinstated after the year. That would be my guess. Can you see a team giving him an opportunity? Is this the end?
Well, so Ray Rice is 28, hasn't had a good year in a couple of years. Is coming off a major contract, and DeMarco Murray gets hurt almost every week. So do I see Dallas looking to pick up a Ray Rice? Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a doubt in my mind. Look, at the beginning of today, I said there's no way Ray Rice makes it to next year or the year after, and I think he's done. He's played his last day in the NFL. And the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I thought, let's think about the reclamation projects that have happened in the NFL. Ray Lewis went on trial for murder. Okay. Chris Henry went on trial for any one of a number of things. Pac-Man Jones went on trial for any one of a number of things. Michael Vick spent time in a federal penitentiary. And all these guys came back and played in the NFL, correct? And Josh Brent, who basically
killed someone,
was convicted of involuntary manslaughter and, for lack of a better term, killed somebody, killed his teammate and his best friend, is now about to be reinstated to the Dallas Cowboys. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to wind up back in the NFL in some capacity. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. As I said, I think it will be a one-year suspension. I think.
Do you think that a team will take a shot on him?
I think it would be a team. There would be two extremes. It would be either a team like the Dallas Cowboys, kind of it would be a team like the Cowboys, or for lack of a better term, oh my goodness. Sorry, that would be the Arizona San Diego game and the first play 65 yards from Carson Palmer, not the first play. Or it would be a team with such a strict hierarchy that there would be no tolerance policy, a Steelers or Patriots, something like that. I think those are the two types of teams that would give him a shot. But I think this is an argument, you know, this is a discussion for a year from now. I think the bigger question is the Roger Goodell issue. And if he knew, what the hell was he thinking? And if he knew and he had seen this video, are we I find it amazing to think this, but could he be gone? And that will be a we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes out. Now, I don't think either of us, you know, either of us really know more than anyone else. But it seems that all the NFL reporters are under the impression that he saw this video and the NFL front office saw this video. And if they did and they gave a 2-game suspension, that's utterly ridiculous.
Well, my question is even more so, if they did see the video and they gave a 2-game suspension, what made them think nobody else was going to see the video? Oh, Andre Ellington just fumbled.
But Arizona was done. Yeah, just for those of you listening on archive, we're doing this a little bit late tonight. 10:30 show running to 11:30 Eastern time. Unfortunately, I had a client meeting, which is good, and then I came home and had to watch the Giants game, which was bad. So we're taping this very, very late, and I appreciate Sean, kind of catering to my schedule tonight. Plus, we, of course, had another dog peeing incident because we can't seem to go a month without one.
Oh, Layla.
So anyway, going from the ridiculous to the more ridiculous, what is it with the Jewish NBA owners and their inability to keep their freaking mouth shut? Atlanta owner, Bruce Levinson. An email comes out.
Wait. Before you say that, it's not just Jewish owners. Come on.
Well, we're 0-2. We're 0-2 so far.
But you're making kind of a racist comment just in that.
Yes, but I'm making it about my own people.
Doesn't make us any less racist. I'm just saying. Okay, what is it with NBA owners? Go ahead.
I was joking, Sean. But it has not been a great year for Jewish owners in the NBA. Would that be a better way to put it?
No, perfect.
Thank you. So, you want to kind of discuss this one?
So, 2 years ago, the owner of the Atlanta Hawks sent out a memo basically stating, in a business context, the demographics of the Phillips Arena crowd that come to the Atlanta Hawks were not what he wanted and were not in the best interest of the Hawks. There were more and this is his words, not mine. There were too many African Americans. There were not enough Caucasian people. There were not enough. The Caucasians were afraid of the African Americans that were at the bars. That there were too many African-American cheerleaders and not enough Caucasians, and on and on and on. And at first, it's funny, because at first it's not funny, but it's an interesting concept, because most of what he said was, it's not to the point of there are too many of this, but we'd like more of this. So it would basically be the concept of saying, I'd like more white people. Not necessarily I don't want African-Americans or I don't want Hispanics. I just would prefer more Caucasians. And I kind of was looking at it going, is that really a racist sentiment? Because he's saying, I'd like more of one. Not to the detriment of the other, but I'd like more of one. And I went to one of my coworkers who happened to be Hispanic, and his name is Rick Montez. And I asked him point blank. I said, look, are these racist comments? And he goes, yes, absolutely they're racist comments. They're not to the same level, but there's when you single out one group over another, one racial group or another, you are being racist. And it made me think a little bit, and he's probably right. So, I don't know what he was thinking, but look, every owner says something similar that they would like to cater to one demographic or another. There's just a way to say it. And he didn't say it appropriately. I think that's the best way to state this.
But should that warrant obviously he's not, this is not, now, please understand for all listeners, it's not done. sell the team, as far as I know. So, and there are people, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, for instance, said that this is not, you know, has argued that this is not racist, saying this is a businessman, this is a business view. So, it's a difficult situation. And also, if this was, well, if this was coming from a black person and kind of stated in the opposite way, where, you know, we want to cater more to the black occasions, we want to cater more to the African American, would there be such an uproar?
Well, that's what I asked my buddy, and he said, I think there wouldn't be so much of an uproar, but that doesn't make it any less racist. And I tend to agree with him on that note. You're right, there probably wouldn't be as much of an uproar, but there certainly would be just as much racism going on. So,
but do you think that this warrants Levinson selling the team?
Well, let's remember, Levinson has put the team up himself.
Yes.
He's not been told to do it, right? So, I mean, there's that, right? I mean, I think that's an important distinction here between him and, say, Donald Sterling, who was told he must sell the team.
Yes.
He was going to be bid out. This has not come to this understanding, and maybe it's been reported that Levinson wanted out anyway, and this is just a very good way of doing it.
Well,
and I'm
because
not saying that's true either, but you can see the fact that this was not mandated by Adam Silver. Man, I almost said Russ Gradick. How old am I? This is not.
That's going back quite a bit.
Yeah, this is not mandated by Adam Silver. But he has done this on his own. So he's going to stand to get a healthy profit from his team, especially when it's been reported that ESPN and Turner are now doubling their network fees over the next 10 years. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he's self-reported. So, do I think that this warrants a sale of the team? No, absolutely not. I really don't. I don't think this rises to the level of that. But then again, Seth, you and I are not in the minority in which he has disparaged, right? I mean, that's his own people, his own fans that he has to answer to, not you and I.
That is true. And, I mean, just kind of looking at some of the numbers, Atlanta, we know, is not exactly a sport. While as often have been had a sports powerhouse as a city, its fandom, not great. The Thrashers were an expansion team that lasted, what, 5 years, 7 years there before moving. The Braves are leaving Atlanta to go to God knows where because of a lack of a stadium deal, because a lot of people are not going to the games. The Falcons do sell well, but the Hawks are estimated to have lost $24 million in basketball operations last year, fifth largest in the league behind Brooklyn, Charlotte, Minnesota, and Detroit. Attendance is well below league average capacity when they're good, and when they're bad, they're typically in the bottom three. You know, this is not – the Atlanta Hawks are the epitome of a team nobody really cares about. And as you said, it may just be – I'm curious to see what the sale price – this is not Los Angeles. This is not a team with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and coached by Doc Rivers. Casual sports fans do not know a single player on the Atlanta Hawks. So I am curious to see what this is probably the most publicity the Atlanta Hawks have gotten since the Dominique Wilkins days. And I'm not saying it in a good way, obviously, but I'm very curious to see what the sales price will be for this team.
So what's your over-under on the sales price? Remember, the Bucks got $550 million last year. Your Milwaukee Bucks.
Formerly my Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, next year you may be an Atlanta Hawks fan.
Oh, good Lord. I've gone from the Hawks to the Jazz.
the Bucks to the Jazz.
My guess is it's somewhere in the 800 to 850 million range.
Well, if he gets 850 million, he's made a nice profit.
As you said, it's not Milwaukee. It is maybe not a better fan base, but it's a better metropolitan area. And I think their cable contract, I believe, significantly better than Milwaukee's. And nowhere near what the Clip is, but it's nowhere near California or Los Angeles or anything along those lines. So I'm trying to, Ballmer overbid by $1 billion, if I remember correctly. So putting them, let's say, at $1 billion, putting Milwaukee at 500, somewhere that 800, 850 seems, I don't want to say reasonable, because I don't think reasonable is certainly the right word, but it seems pretty good. What's your thought?
Well, your philosophy is that it was not a racist comment that were in there.
I didn't say it's not a racist comment. I'm saying it's not what I said was it was not to the level of a Donald Sterling.
Okay, I agree with that. Absolutely.
And I'm saying there are people, including African Americans, who don't really say, who have kind of argued in favor of Levin, saying he's not racist based on these, saying that these are business. This is a business view of this. And I'm not 100% saying they're wrong. I'm not saying it's right, but I'm not. I haven't read every detail of this one. This is not the Donald Sterling where you were tied to the TV, couldn't look away. Between Ray Rice, between the NFL week one, between the U.S. Open, this is something that's incredibly interesting, but not something that I've been reading every minute of.
Wait, there was tennis this week?
Yeah. Who's in the finals today? A Croatian and the first Asian ever in a Grand Slam final.
Yeah, Japanese guy, right?
Yep, he beat Djokovic, he beat Wawrinka, and he got his absolute butt kicked today. Because now in their infinite.
Let me answer your question, then we'll get back to it. I think it goes for $1.1 billion.
Really?
That's the answer. I think it goes for that high. I think with the new television contract, it goes for $1 billion. $1 billion on the mark. So $1 billion, you have what, 850? You said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I feel like a price. We're doing a Price is Right bid.
Well, I'm more than happy. Oh no, you have to be under for the Price is Right. Well, I think you'll probably win the under. But anyway, I got $1 billion. So let's go on to the tennis, because I didn't pay much attention even in the last 3 weeks to the tennis, truth be told.
Well, do you ever pay much attention to tennis?
I just said, shocking, Sean does not pay attention to tennis. I was with you. Now, I did pay attention in the 80s and the 90s, but I have lacked, and I couldn't tell you more than 5 people in the top 10, in both men and women, and I think they're all Americans. But, so...
You think they're all Americans?
No, I said I couldn't tell you more than 5 people in the top 10 of both men and women, and the 5 that I named were all Americans. So basically, I know nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say there are certainly not 5 Americans right now in the top 10 of anything.
No? In both men and women?
No. Nah. There's not one American. There's not one American in the top 10, man in the top 10. Serena's not a man, honey. And so Serena is unquestionably the number one player in the women. So there's no other American. That's it. There's one person in the top 10.
Let me see how many top 10s I can name. Serena, Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, Murray, Sharapova, top 10?
Yep. Yes, she's top 10.
The other young, really young Russian that beat Sharapova? Yes.
I don't know who that is. Wozniacki beat Sharapova. Wozniacki beat Sharapova.
So that gives me 6. So I got 6 out of 20, which is actually quite impressive for me.
No, it's actually not.
What do you mean not?
The top 4 men are pretty well known. Djokovic, Murray, Federer, and Nadal have been around for, it feels like, forever.
Right,
I would be
so
surprised if you don't. And then the two most well-known women on tour are Sharapova and Serena Williams.
I got 6 out of 20, which for most people would be insane. So I'm good on 6 out of 20. I said I didn't follow tennis.
Yes, but you follow sports as a whole. So I would expect you to know a little bit more than that.
Okay, well, I don't. So there you go. 6 out of 20 is good enough for me. I'm just going with it. I'm good. I got 30%. I'm okay.
Okay, I'm gonna actually read you the names of the top 10 in both men's and women's. And this is how obscure the women's are at this point. Number 1 is Serena.
Yeah, I got
number
her.
Number two is Simona Halep.
Never heard of her.
Number 3 is Petra Kvitova.
Also never heard of her.
She, I believe, won Wimbledon this year. Number 4 is Sharapova.
Yeah, I've heard of her.
Number 5 is Agnieszka Radwanska.
Wow, that just sounds like a good red wine.
It is.
Okay.
It's a nice Pinot.
Number 6.
No, we know 25 of those are coming this year. Number 6 is Lina.
Who?
Lina. She won the French this year.
Great. So I don't know the Wimbledon champion or the French. Okay, continue.
Number 7 is Eugenie Bouchard.
I've heard of her.
She's Canadian. Number 8 is Angelika Kerber.
Never heard of her.
Number 9 is Caroline Wozniacki, who you may know as the ex-fiance of Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yeah, she's hot.
Yes, she's hot.
Okay.
She also lost in the finals of the U.S. Open to Serena this year.
Okay.
And number 10 is Anna Ivanovic.
I've heard of her.
She used to be number 1 in the world several years ago.
She's really good looking.
Yeah, she is very good looking as well. So
that is
apparently how Sean remembers women's players.
Is there anything
Miss Fink is not impressed. So anyway, men's singles rankings: Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, 1, 2, 3.
Count them all.
Stan Wawrinka, number 4.
Never heard of him.
He won the Australian this year. David Ferreira, number 5.
That was in last January. I don't remember what I did last month.
You pretty much probably were preparing for fantasy football drafts all last month. Number 5, David Ferrer.
Nope, never heard of him.
Number 6, Miles Raonic.
Nope.
Number 7, Tomas Berdych.
I've heard of him.
He's been around for a while. Number 8, Grigor Dimitrov.
He must be Russian.
He is, I think, one Bulgarian or something like that. Actually, in many ways, best known as being Maria Sharapova's boyfriend. It's very lucky for him. Number 9, Andy Murray.
Yep.
And number 10, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who's best known for looking like Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
Okay, so you're 5 for 10 on the men's, 4 for 10 on the women's. Okay, so you're at
45%. I'm okay with that.
Yep, you're a true tennis savant. Okay,
well,
on to what people want to talk about.
Okay, so my question is, due to the Far Eastern participation in the U.S. Open Finals by some guy, I don't know his name, but I knew he was Japanese. Do you believe that that will expand the territory in which tennis leads today? Or do you think this is just a one-off?
Actually, I don't. this, I believe, similar to almost how, and I forget, I don't think it was Sayri Pak. I forget who the South Korean women's golfer was, who became the first one to kind of become really pretty well known. And then within 10 years, you had 7 South Korean women in the top 10 or some ridiculous number like that. I think it's not going to overwhelm. It won't certainly be to that level. But I do think that it is a precedent that will kind of invigorate tennis in Japan.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, the internationalization of any sport is an excellent thing. I really do believe that. So, I mean, anytime you can spread the nature of a sport, I'm all in favor of it. So good for that. And who won the U.S. Open? I know who won the women's.
The men's was won actually by the number 14 seed, Marion Cilic, who beat Federer in the semis and then beat Kishinori, who was number 11, number 10 seed, who had beaten Djokovic in the semis as well, in the semis. Excuse me?
And where is he from?
He's from Japan. Cilic is from Croatia.
Oh, so we have a Croat versus a Japanese player.
And we actually have a call-in.
Excellent.
So I'm curious, who's calling in at 11 o'clock to talk either U.S. Open or football?
I've called in to talk football.
Excellent.
I think it's time for us to stop talking tennis. So please,
yeah,
indeed.
First, what's your name, sir?
My name is Jeff from Long Valley.
Excellent, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sean.
So, what brings you to Seth and Tone Sports Radio?
Well, I was sitting on my couch watching this dreadful game after watching a previous dreadful game, and I tuned in because I saw you guys a post on Facebook that you guys were broadcasting at this odd time. So, I guess I have two points to discuss. I'd be interested first in hearing who you guys think, who comes away out of week one smelling like a rose in the NFL.
Okay. What's your second point? And then we'll answer.
My second point is, how's Crimea Rivers doing?
Oh, Jeff.
You may have to answer the first one, the second one, because I'm not sure. I can really do too many Justin Timberlake references.
Okay, so Jeff is a good buddy of mine from the way, way back. And nice to hear from you, Jeff. And so Crimea River is my fantasy league team that I am playing Jeff this week. So my one of my six leagues is Jeff. The Crimea River is down, I believe, 65 to 70 points this week, and Crimea River is crying like crazy. So, Jeff, I appreciate you calling in and showing me how humble you are in winning this week, and the modesty that you're showing and how well, and we'll see each other in the playoffs again, I guarantee.
Yeah, I believe it's 127 to 40-something right now, but... No, I'm actually, I was quite impressed with the Lions tonight. Their offense looks quite good. And
from a Giants point of view, Jeff, you may have been happy with the Lions, but you weren't real happy with your Giants.
But it was expected, actually.
Well, Seth knows all about that. So I appreciate you calling in, Jeff. We'll get to your comments in a second.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that was Jeff from Long Valley, and very much appreciating him calling in and basically, I don't know, telling me I stink in fantasy football, which is quite appropriate after this week. Jeff had Reggie Bush, Matt Stafford, and Calvin Johnson going tonight. So for any Giants fan that's out there, that may be your worst nightmare, and was the Giants night. Was it not, Seth?
Yeah, there wasn't much of a surprise on this. Detroit is a team at home is going to beat up on mediocre to middling teams. And even though I am a Giants fan, they are pretty mediocre. And my only regret, and because I do a pick 'em every week, was that I did not pick this as a best bet. Unfortunately, I happened to take your beloved New York Jets as a best bet, which did me no good.
What do you mean did you no good? Do you play with the spread?
Yes.
You took it as your best bet?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What was the spread that you got?
5.5.
Okay, so here's the thing that absolutely boggles my mind every single week. Is how close Vegas gets it. I mean, the Jets were up. I was at the game yesterday, so they were up, I believe it was 19-7. And you're kind of like, okay, this game's over, the Jets cover, it's 5.5. And then the Raiders score on, with like 1.5 minutes left, James Jones on a great catch, to 19-14. So it's 5 points, and the spread is 5.5. I am thoroughly amazed every single week as to how close the spreads are and how well they actually get it, to the point that people are saying at the game, this game is fixed because there's no way that 5.5 points is a spread and it gets to 5. So
yeah, this is why people think these games are fixed. But to be honest, unless you were a Jets fan and you don't have red zone, no one was watching the game. There were so many great endings last night, yesterday. You look at Atlanta, New Orleans. You look at Buffalo, Chicago. The Jets-Raiders game was unwatchable, to be perfectly honest. You always do kind of wonder. The spreads, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they pull it off. To me, I thought the Jets would win that game by 20. But then I guess I should have figured the Jets wouldn't be able to score 20 points. You know, I thought Chicago at home would blow out a mediocre, at best, Buffalo team. Didn't happen. Jay Cutler having the same, you know. They just seem, you know. The NFL, I guess, at the end of the day, most of these games seem to go. I don't know how Vegas does it. I just don't.
Well, you can. Let me tell you, from a person that was watching the Jets game firsthand, the Jets very easily could have scored 30 yesterday if they weren't so stupid. So, and generally, that's the one thing that you can never count on when you're a Jets fan, is the fact that our team is always going to be stupid. So, let's hear. Geno Smith fumbles on the 4 on a run. He intercepts on the 18, where I don't know. Seth, you and I could have caught that ball. It was that open. And then he takes a sack that takes the Jets out of field goal range, a 15-yard sack, just unbelievable stupidity is the way I'd like to say it. But let's address Jeff's question. Who do you think won yesterday? Who do you think made the most gains out of yesterday's game? And you can even say tonight, because I think the Lions made a great amount of a great gain out of playing their first game. And right now you have Arizona and San Diego 0-0. So what do you think?
As I said, to give Detroit credit for winning over a bad team at home, I find kind of silly. Who was I impressed with? Miami. Miami being pretty much dominating the fourth quarter from New England, I thought Buffalo looked really good. I thought Buffalo out-toughed Chicago, which over the years has not been the toughest thing in the world to do. But number one, I would not expect it from Buffalo. And number two, it's not a great reflection on the Bears, with a team with that almost an all-star team of talent, excuse me, to be losing at home and only scoring 20 points. Tennessee looked solid. And I know that's a team that you like this year. Those are the teams that have impressed me. To beat the Giants at home is not something that I would get overwhelmingly. I'd be overwhelmed with one way or the other.
No, I'd agree with you. I mean, you know me. I'm a big Jake Locker fan this year.
You are.
I've been a big Jake Locker fan the whole year.
for his entire career. The thing that escaped Jake Locker is health. And if he's healthy, this team, I believe this team may be a playoff team. I think they're going to go 8-8, maybe 9-7, and maybe sneak into the playoffs. So I was very much impressed by them. And like you said before, I'm very much impressed by the Buffalo Bills. I mean, no question. You go into Chicago, a great stat that was posted on ESPN, I think it was this morning, before yesterday, Jared Allen, who used to play for the Minnesota Vikings, was 0-7 whenever he played in Chicago. Well, guess what? Now he's 0-8. He plays for Chicago. So let's see how long that goes for. But the fact is, they did not play well. Chicago did not play well. Other teams, look, Miami always has a good win at the beginning of the season. Do I think that this will stay? No, absolutely not. The Patriots will figure it out. They'll go 10-6. Miami will go 8-8, like you said before, maybe 9-7. And that'll be it. I mean, the Patriots are still the class of the division. I like Baltimore coming back. I like Jacksonville running up a 17-0 score against the Eagles. And they just don't have the talent to keep up with the Eagles. But more importantly...
Wait a minute. You were impressed with Baltimore losing at home?
I was impressed by Baltimore coming back. Not necessarily winning the game. I see progress when teams are down at halftime by big scores and come back, even if they lose the game. Okay, so they lost at home, yes. Did they lose to a better team? Yes. We both picked Cincinnati to win that division, did we not?
Yeah.
Okay, so Baltimore loses their number one running back. They lose their number two running back. And they still play within the game. So is it a moral – there's no such thing as a moral victory in the NFL. We know that. But was I impressed by the way that they came out in the second half? Yes. I was impressed by the way that Jacksonville came out in the first half to a 17-0 lead. Were they able to hold on? No. Sometimes it is more a judge of talent than it is the team itself. And I believe that Cincinnati and Philadelphia have more talent than Baltimore and Jacksonville. No doubt. But the team that I looked at most yesterday that I was absolutely impressed with was the Houston Texans. Their defense was top notch yesterday. Now they did play the Washington Redskins, who we both don't really like this year, but they played the game plan that they needed to play and came out with a win. I was very much impressed by that.
I'm still kind of blown away that you were impressed by the Ravens, a team
that
their quarterback, with 8 seconds left in the first half, didn't have enough, as a seven-year veteran and a prior year Super Bowl MVP, didn't have enough common sense to throw the ball away to get a field goal.
That's a stupid move.
A stupid move by a seven-year, six-year quarterback.
I think you, Seth Kamens, have to extol your bias against Joe Flacco. A little.
I could care less about Joe Flacco. The Ravens, you know, I don't see where you're coming from on the Ravens. I could see you saying that about Jacksonville going to Philly, going up 17-0. That makes sense to me. Philly is overwhelmingly more talented than Jacksonville is. Even if Baltimore did this in Cincinnati, maybe I could see it a little bit more. But I have a lot of trouble giving Baltimore credit for losing at home to Cincinnati. I don't see that at all.
You don't see Cincinnati as incredibly more talented than Baltimore?
More talented, yes. Incredibly, like significantly more talented? Maybe. But most of us have Baltimore at 7-9, 8-8, and Cincy at 10-6. And, you know,
yeah,
two-game difference. You see Jacksonville at 4-12, and Philly at 12-4.
I don't think I had Baltimore that high.
Okay.
I still don't think. I think I had them at like 6-10. I think I had
Cincinnati at like 10-6 or 11-5.
I don't think you had them that high. Maybe you had them at 10-6. I would, as a team, I mean, as a Baltimore team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, the idea of having a moral victory as a loss at home to a division rival blows my mind.
I didn't say that. Like I said, it's not a moral victory. I was impressed by the way that they came out in the second half. That's it.
I mean, I can, say that about Cleveland. I mean,
I can definitely say that about Cleveland. No question. I could. But I don't think the difference between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, quite frankly, is as big as the difference between Cincinnati and Baltimore. I just don't.
Wow.
And you know what? That may change over the year. That's my opinion today.
So who else? But, so I'm trying to, I guess the other shocker. I mean, I shouldn't say shock. The most shocking score to me, though, this first week, besides for Chicago, Buffalo, Minnesota going to St. Louis and beating them by 28. Mike Zimmer, who, as some of you know, I'm a pretty big Cincy fan, and I thought Mike Zimmer deserved a coaching position several years ago. This would not have been what I anticipated as their as his first game. I did not see this coming at all. Potentially a win, but not a game as dominant as this.
Well, Sean Hill went out of the game. They went with a guy named Austin, who I've never even heard of, as their quarterback. So, I mean, there's that, right? Because they're without Sam Bradford. Now they're without their second quarterback. You, as a Maryland fan, know this all too well, how it is to be on a third, fourth, fifth, sixth quarterback that you may have. Who knows? Maybe Chad Greenway will line up at the quarterback position for the Minnesota Vikings this year. But the fact is, when you don't have a quarterback, a starting quarterback in the NFL, you're going to have problems, right? I mean, at this point, that's what it is. They don't have a starting quarterback. So,
yeah, but I'm looking at the stats. Hill was 8 for 13 for 81 yards in the first half. Not great, not horrible. Davis, I agree, I had never heard of either. 16 for 23, 192 yards. Not horrible stats.
I think the game was out of reach by then.
It was 13-0 at the half. And to be honest, of all the great games, this was kind of the least that I was following.
Seth, you're reading up. We didn't hear anything you just said.
I said it was 13-0 at the half. And to be honest, with all the other great games going on, I didn't quite – this was not a game I was particularly following very hard. So I don't know if the game was out of reach that quickly or was out of reach because it was 20-3 at the end of three. It may have been, it may not have been, but still 16 for 23, not terrible. But
no,
I mean, who expected 34 points from Minnesota?
Minnesota. No, but you're right. I mean, you have to be impressed by what Minnesota was able to do. They also are playing the Rams, who lost Chris Long in the first half, I believe, to an injury. So that takes away a little bit of it. And we'll see what they can do. I mean, we both like Minnesota playing outdoors this year. I mean, I think that is a huge benefit for them, especially since they have Adrian Peterson running the ball. So we'll see what happens. But definitely a great – wow, Ryan Matthews just got stood up in the backfield. What a great debut for Mike Zimmer. I mean, no question. He's deserved it for years. We've both said it. Glad to see him taking the reins of an NFL team. And he's always been able to motivate. So let's see what happens in Minnesota. I mean, he's got a young, young crew. And Cordell Patterson had a great game. And they were able to utilize him in every facet of the game. But let me ask you this. Were you more impressed with any other team than you were by Seattle this week?
Seattle was the most impressive team, I believe. They looked dominant. And Green Bay, unfortunately, looked fragile. And that's not really speaking well of my Super Bowl pick. You know, their defensive line did not look great. Russell Williams looks Wilson looks solid. Excuse me, Marshawn Lynch looked fine. Yeah, they're a very, very good team. And Percy Harvin, when healthy, is the question.
Zach, you're fading in now.
I'm breaking up again.
Yep.
Percy Harvin, when he's healthy, is scary. Seattle is the best team in the NFL. The question is, you know, can they repeat? And obviously, despite what people think, it's way, way, way too early to make real determinations on that.
Absolutely. I mean, what they were, and what was interesting was how much Green Bay respected Richard Sherman to the point that they stayed away from him a la Deion Sanders. Do you think Richard Sherman deserves that much respect?
I'm thinking of it like this.
You're in and out again.
I'm kind of thinking of it like this. Green Bay has two top 10 to 15 receivers, Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Cobb plays the slot. Jordy Nelson plays on one of the ends. Seattle, because they have such confidence in both Sherman and Byron Maxwell, does not have their cornerbacks follow the wideouts. They just go to their specific position. So what happened was Green Bay put Jared Blakeney, the rookie, split end against Sherman. And if you're of your choice of throwing a rookie against Sherman or Jordy Nelson against Byron Maxwell or Cobb in the slot, Blakeney's not going to get through too many passes. So how about that for some X's and O's, something you don't hear very often.
We're not on the golf course at the Byron Nelson Classic. You're perfectly fine.
Yeah. So the only one of the team, someone who had a worse weekend, to say the least, than the Green Bay Packers, is my new conference, the Big Ten. There are enough words to say the word "ew" as Michigan State goes to Oregon and lets up 28 consecutive points in the second half. Michigan gets shut out.
What? I think Seth left us. So Michigan got shut out by Notre Dame, and then Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech. So I'm really concerned where Seth is right now, but I'll continue on. So the Big Ten basically hasn't had a week like this since, like, 1989. I think that was the year that all three teams lost in the first half, in the first game, or lost at the same time anyway. So the question is, does the Big Ten have the wherewithal to come back and have some good games and get themselves back in the playoff hunt? Because right now, there's no team that's going to be in the playoff hunt, except perhaps Penn State. Now, if you listen to the show religiously, you know that last year we talked a lot about the free report. Last year, maybe 2 years ago now, talked about the free report and how there were sanctions levied against Penn State. And a lot of those were scholarships. So they had a bowl ban of four years. So now, George Mitchell, who is the ex-senator from Vermont, is the one that's reviewing everything that's going on with the sanctions and what's going on in Penn State. And he recommended today, and the NCAA followed suit, that the NCAA reinstate all the scholarships starting in 2015-2016, and that Penn State be eligible for not only the Big Ten Conference Championship, but also a bowl game this year. Well, to all those people that say that this demoralizes or is a detriment towards the victims, I say that these players that are on the team, and I said that at the time, did nothing wrong. Absolutely the right way that it should have been handled. I'm watching Carson Palmer run right now, which is quite possibly the funniest thing since me running with a couple of bad knees. So, just a little bit of laugh. So, we come down to the final 5 minutes. I don't think Seth's going to be joining us in the final 5 minutes. Seems like he has lost his way. This 4th-and-3, Arizona up 3-0.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
Seth's back. So we got five minutes left.
I kind of touched upon the Big Ten. I kind of touched upon Penn State back, and it looks like San Diego just blocked a punt, and they are going to recover it at about the 20. So anyway, so 5 minutes left. I'll go first. So Providence legend Marvin Bad News Barnes passed away today. So arguably the greatest player in the history of college basketball in the state of Rhode Island. And so he passed away today. And there was an interesting story about Marvin Barnes, who also played in the ABA, averaged 20.9 points a game and 17.9 rebounds in college. Like, that's Hank Gathers. That's I don't even know who else that would be. So Barnes was also, according to College Basketball Talk, was also one of the most eccentric players in basketball. In one famous incident, Barnes checked the itinerary for a flight leaving in Louisville at 8 p.m. local time and landing in St. Louis at 7:56 p.m. local time. He told the team that to cancel his ticket, and he rented a car because, as Barnes put it, and I quote, "I ain't getting on no time machine," because he would have landed 4 minutes before he left. Oh, Marvin Barnes. Anyway, he led the Friars to the 1973 Final Four, which I'm sure Seth could tell you the other three members of the Final Four in 1973, and Providence retired his jersey in 2008. Seth, you're off for 3 minutes.
73 was UCLA, I think Florida State, and maybe North Carolina State as well, because I think it was the year before they would go to the title, 74. If you want to read about probably the best basketball, one of the two or three best basketball books I've ever read, called Loose Balls, which is the history of the ABA, and they talk a lot about Marvin Barnes. And he was interesting.
It was Providence, Memphis State, Indiana, and UCLA. Continue.
Memphis State, because that's when Bill Walton won 21 for 22 in the final or in the semi. Must have been the final. I think they played Indiana in the semi. So anyway, if you ever want to read a truly funny sports book, Loose Balls by Terry Pluto, The History of the ABA, go for it. Some interesting things. You have some injuries. Robert Mathis for the Colts, out for the year. Like, that defense isn't enough trouble to begin with. Jadeveon Clowney, out 4 to 6 weeks. It was a heck of a first week of the season. You had six or seven games going down to the end. Carolina, Cam Newton, beating Tampa, who's a lot of people's Cinderella team. It's good to have football back. It's good to have college football back. And with that, plus the U.S. Open, just a great sports weekend. And can't wait for next week. So for both the and we'll talk a little bit more college football next week, because it's 10:30 and it's 11:30. So anyway, for Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamen, Seth and Sean Sports Radio, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.
See ya.